Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, and I'm very pleased to have a repeat guest back today. Dr. Jacobson was on the Atlanta Business Radio Show a while back, and he teased us with some great information, so much so that we said, we got to do a special segment just for you. At the Atlanta Business Radio Show, we love to put a spotlight on Atlanta's businesses, but even more importantly, we like to focus on education and what's going on in the community. And this morning, we have a great show for our listeners, all about the Global Learning Initiative at Mount Vernon Presbyterian School. So welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show to our panelists, and I'm even more excited because we have students today. I love young folks in the studio. We've done some segments with the DECA kids, and boy, they get a lot of hits because I think these kids are really into social media. First guest, I would like to welcome Addie Placido, who's a senior at Mount Vernon Presbyterian School. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
So tell us, how long have you been at Mount Vernon?
I've been at Mount Vernon for 13 years, since kindergarten. This will be my 13th year.
Oh, my goodness. So you've seen a lot of changes.
I have, yes. I've pretty much been through everything. So
what are some of the activities you're involved in at Mount Vernon?
I'm a varsity cheerleader. I've been cheerleading for 4 years now. Also, I'm the school's environmental prefect, which is a new position this year and basically focuses on really any and all activities, projects, events, that sort of thing that revolves around global awareness and really just the environment and what the school is doing to sort of promote that awareness among its students.
Excellent. That's got to look pretty good on your college application.
Yeah, it's exciting. So I've
been working on any of those?
Part of it. Yes.
I bet you've been working on a lot of those.
Oh, yeah.
Any thoughts on where you might want to go to college?
Well, I've been accepted to Auburn so far. That's my early acceptance. And I've applied already to University of Georgia, University of South Carolina, Georgia Tech, and the University of Alabama. And I'm working on some others. So
terrific. Gosh, you have been busy.
Yes.
Well, welcome. We're anxious to hear what you have to say about this global initiative, and we'll get back to you in just a little bit.
Okay.
We also want to welcome Miles Mallory, who's a junior at Mount Vernon Presbyterian, right?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
All right. Well, how long have you been at Mount Vernon?
Freshman year, I came to Mount Vernon, and so I guess I've been here for 3 years.
Excellent. And what are some of the things you're doing there?
I do varsity football, I'm starting, and varsity baseball for sports-wise. And also, I'm the founder and president of the business club that has started this year. And what we do is we have speakers come every Tuesday and have a couple of people that usually involved in the school somehow. And we talk about certain topics that we present at the beginning of meetings, and it's a really good stuff.
And you're working on your Eagle Scout, so I know you're busy.
Yes, ma'am, I am.
That is impressive. There's so much involved with that. And by the way, I've heard that there are two things that couldn't look better on a college resume: if you're an Eagle Scout and if you speak Mandarin Chinese. So you're one step up there. Good luck with the Eagle Scout. That's a lot of hard work. Well, excellent. We're going to get back to you in just a little bit as well. But to kick off our show, we want to hear all about this Global Learning Initiative from Dr. Jacobson.
Thank you for having me back.
Yes, you did such a great job last time.
Well, it was a lot of fun, and I was glad for the opportunity to really show off our students here at the school.
Because you are doing a lot of things differently when it comes to learning and when it comes to education. Maybe elaborate a little bit on your partnership with the CDC and how all this came about.
First of all, we developed a program last year called the Global Learning Initiative, and what we do is we give the opportunity to seniors to choose a particular topic. Now, the impetus for this program, sort of the inspiration for the program, came from a book called High Noon. And basically, it addresses 20 global problems and 20 years to solve them. And they cover topics like global warming and deforestation, education for all, global infectious diseases, which I'll talk about in just a second, the digital divide, illegal drugs, e-commerce rules, intellectual property rights, and so on. So these 20 major global problems and basically 20 years to solve them. So with that in mind, by the way, this book is written by, the last name is Richard, called High Noon. So with that in mind, we presented this list this list of topics to our seniors 2 years ago. They chose the environment as one of the global issues to address within the school. This year, the seniors, Addie and her classmates, chose infectious diseases. So when you obviously talk about the topic of infectious diseases, one of the first organizations one might think of is the CDC. And that sort of relationship developed over time and was such a great opportunity, I think, for the school, but also for the CDC to really come into a school system where students chose a topic. And many times, infectious diseases is not a glamorous topic, yet at the same time, it has such an impact on the world. And our students locally here in Sandy Springs chose this particular topic to explore.
I'll let you introduce our guest from the CDC, if you don't mind. Would you like to introduce our guest from the CDC? What? I'm now hiding behind you. I see we have another guest, too. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Also, we have Don Sasso. And what's your role at Mount Vernon Presbyterian?
I am head of the middle and upper school.
Okay. And how have you been involved in this?
Well, we've kind of guided on this is an activity really for our Glen campus, which encompasses our grades 7 through 12. And as Dr. Jacobson said, last year we studied the global environment. So we actually divided up different environmental topics among the six classes that are on our campus. That included things like recycling, solar power, environmental consciousness among world nations, global warming, the oceans environment, the balance of the ecosystem, and deforestation. And we really launched a year-long study, class by class, of those different topics, and then had a culminating event at the end of the year on Earth Day, coincidentally, where students presented their findings. As Dr. Jacobson said, we then went back to the drawing board for the second year of Global Learning Initiative, presented the list of topics, and our seniors surprisingly chose a global infectious disease. It was kind of a surprise to us, but presented an enormous opportunity for us to contact CDC and hopefully get them involved in studying. They were more than gracious with their willingness to be involved and had provided us really with world-class speakers as we go on through the year studying different aspects of global disease. People sometimes have asked us, you know, why global disease? Why do you think these kids were interested in it? And Dr. Jacobson mentioned High Noon by J.F. Richard, and I just thought I'd read some excerpts that contain some pretty shocking information about the world state of affairs with these diseases. And I quote, "The world suddenly faces an appalling health crisis. AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, pneumonia, diarrhea, and measles now kill 13 million people a year, and the numbers keep going up. Today, 40 million people suffer from AIDS, 95% of them in developing countries. Since the epidemic started 20 or so years ago, more than 60 million have developed AIDS and 25 million have died, close to the toll of the Black Death between 1347 and 1352 in Europe. Every day, 15,000 people get infected, most of them between the ages of 15 and 24. The spread of AIDS has slowed in Africa, but it's now increasing in India, Russia, the Caribbean, and lately China. Some 12 million people have been orphaned by AIDS, a figure projected to balloon to 40 million by 2010. Malaria, caused by a mosquito-borne parasite, is preventable, but remains one of the greatest challenges of our times. Almost 2 billion people are affected in one way or another by the disease and its fallout, and the situation is getting worse. 1 million people die every year from malaria. Even tuberculosis, caused by bacteria spread mostly by already infected people's coughing, is making a comeback. 50 years after the discovery of drugs that can cure it, it's on the rise all over the developing world, and now is increasing again, even in rich countries. There are now 8 to 10 million new cases of tuberculosis a year. About 2 million people die from it each year. So, as you see, and I go on to quote, infectious disease has become one of the world's most urgent issues. We're in a race against time to control the spread of the most dangerous diseases before the diseases themselves wear down the drugs that prevent them. Yeah. So startling information in terms of world affairs and not only the presence of these diseases, but the growth of these diseases among populations. And unfortunately, most of the time, that's among emerging nations and the poorest people who can least afford to deal with them.
Right, definitely taking the kids' minds and expanding them, not something you naturally think about, living in Sandy Springs where things are clean and we don't have to worry about our water, and our health care is outstanding. It's, wow, I mean, to take it outside of their little box is fabulous. So, Don, your involvement with this, this is the second year. Where do you see it going?
Well, I think it's an activity that has interested our kids. It certainly has kind of energized our staff. So we want to continue with the study this year. And as I said, we're involved with CDC for the remainder of this year. I'd like to introduce Susan McBrady in a moment just to give a CDC perspective. But as the year goes on and we come to the spring, we anticipate meeting with the rising senior class for next year, going over that list of topics and see what they're interested in terms of pursuing a third initiative in the coming year. So Susan McBrady from CDC, we want to thank you for being here, and especially thank you for CDC's involvement and your personal involvement in identifying and providing these world-class speakers to us. What a great opportunity for our students.
Well, it's a pleasure for me personally and professionally, and also I'm learning that this is jump-starting into something maybe bigger for CDC, working with other colleagues to see how we can replicate this Mount Vernon experience and maybe be more proactive in reaching out to schools. So it's been a win-win. Certainly, experts who have agreed to speak, they have enjoyed it. They are looking for feedback. How did we do? Did the kids like us? Mm-hmm. So you think of them as being accomplished scientists, MDs, PhDs, and they care very much how the children are receiving their presentations. So it's going very well, but also could grow into something bigger for CDC as well.
Addie, can you talk a little bit about some of these presentations that you've heard and maybe what you and some of your colleagues have thought about them? Because these are big topics, and having these world-renowned speakers talk to y'all about them, what a great opportunity. How's it been?
It's been very cool just to see all kinds of different ideas and interests, being sparked from these speakers. I know when Dr. Rudley Archer came in to talk to us about really how the CDC dealt with the spread of different, epidemics when the earthquake in Haiti, took place last year. I think that opened a lot of eyes because I know at Mount Vernon, we've always kind of been interested in outreach and different things, involving other countries. For instance, we just came from an Invisible Children presentation, actually, few minutes ago, chapel speakers from the organization came in to talk about the war in Uganda and how that's really affecting the children over there. And I know that students, all my friends at Mount Vernon are really, really passionate about getting involved and things like that. So really having those speakers come opens a lot of eyes. And, because we don't really hear about the depth to which organizations like the CDC and other companies and organizations, things like that, really get involved in the spread of, these epidemics that are taking over, our world. It's really cool to see how everyone responds to that. I know personally, I have always been interested in, science, different diseases and how they're spread and cured and things like that. So I do think that it's definitely opened my eyes just to hear about, things I never would have imagined, going on in the world. And it's really sparked my interest to, in terms of maybe a possible career path one day.
I would imagine, because there are so many things out there. It goes beyond, sneezing and coughing into your elbow, which is really all we think about as far as infectious disease when we're in grade school and middle school. Right. But then to open it up and give you that experience, because honestly, most people's experience with the CDC is driving past it and realizing, gosh, that looks really serious. But, to have these speakers, what a fabulous opportunity. So how have the topics and the speakers been decided on, Susan? I mean, you send these folks out. What are some of the topics and some of the things that have been talked about?
Well, I'd like to compliment working with Don Sasso and the organization that went into this. It goes back to what he said. The students determined the topic. The topics were suggested for the entire year, so we're not going month to month. It is laid out. They helped choose the topics, so I was provided with a list, dates, time, where, when, and so I began to research, did a little research on different experts at CDC, asked people who might be a good guest speaker, and then I did it by email initially because people are very busy and we're so email driven, but I did drop a few names. Dr. Stephen Thatcher is the head of science at CDC and happened to have been a friend of Don Sasso's. Oh, wow. So there was some of that connection that was just a beginning. And then the topics were presented to me. The year was laid out. And all I have to do is find the people and appeal to them. And I find that they're very excited about speaking to students. So it's all been going very, very smoothly. There's excitement on all fronts. But I would like to say, going in, when I first entered into this, I did a site visit at the school, and I was so impressed. I feel that the overarching philosophy of the school, the board of directors, the leadership of Mount Vernon Presbyterian School lends itself to this environment for the students. So the ripple effect, I think, is tremendous, and I tip my hat to the leadership of the school and the board of directors, how the school was even built with environmental consciousness and sustainability, and it's all over the school. So these students, I believe, will be leaders in the future, environmentally conscious students.
Dawn, Susan touched on a topic that I'd love for you to elaborate on, because I know the Glen Kemp campus has been known to be green. What does that mean? I mean, what types of things did you take into consideration when building the campus?
Well, I think the people who were responsible for planning the campus had tremendous foresight in terms of planning, in terms of environmental impact. The building is LEED certified at the silver level, which is the next to highest level in a United States certification program for environmentally friendly buildings. So it's just a fantastic, it's a fantastic building, but it's also an educational tool for our students. Just to give you some ideas of some of the features of the building has a reflective roof, so it reflects off heat, enabling us to better control the interior environment of the school. All of the bathrooms are equipped with water-saving devices. All of the lighting in the building is high-efficiency lighting. The building is really full of beautiful windows that let in tremendous indirect lighting. The building itself is heated and cooled geothermally, so there are giant rods driven down under the football field, which bring energy in from the earth, which can then be manipulated inside by equipment. But it makes the building, in terms of heating and cooling, much more efficient. And a feature that I thought was amazing, the gym floor is actually made out of bamboo, not the traditional walnut or oak. It's made of bamboo, which is a very sustainable resource, in that bamboo grows like a weed, and it can be replaced very, very easily. And it's a beautiful floor, very durable, and so I think, in terms of foresight and planning, with all that we're learning today and all that we hear about green and sustainability, years ago, the planners of this school had the intelligence and foresight to build that into the building.
So as we build four new buildings that are upcoming, whether it's another academic building, a performing arts center, a chapel, a field house, those buildings will all be LEED certified. We hope at the gold level, but they will all be LEED certified. So every building on the Glen campus will be able to reflect its LEED certification, which I think is significant, especially in this day and age, but as it relates to the philosophy at the school in being environmentally friendly.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. I do want to ask the three adults. I mean, as kids, when you were going to school, did you have that one teacher or that one influential person? I mean, Susan, you've been in the Peace Corps, I see from your resume.
Yes.
Everybody's probably had one person or one incident in their life that sparked them into the pattern of learning that they're at now. I mean, in the career choice that they've made. I'm giving you a little bit of time to think about it. But think about it. One person or one experience or a mentor, it might have even been another parent that or your own parent, that really gave you some knowledge and helped direct you. Any thoughts?
Well, I would like to say that where I grew up, it was a very remote area in northern Maine, and I didn't grow up with television. I grew up with books. So it was really books and stories, and I was always inspired by well, Annie Oakley, for instance, which I can't ride a horse like her, but the whole migration of people to the West, and I loved Pearl S. Buck and her stories about mm-hmm. China, and there were just, so I would say it was a multitude of people, mm-hmm. but they all had something in common, and that was a sense of adventure and a sense of service and a sense of taking on the unknown. So not one person, but an activity, the activity of reading.
And which came first, the Peace Corps or the CDC for you?
Peace Corps. I was one of, they called us older volunteers. There is no age limit for Peace Corps. And I was looking for a career change. And I was thinking about graduate school. But I decided to do field work and went into Peace Corps, which I considered to be practical field work, graduate school, if you will. And that activity in 2005-2006 put me on the radar screen for Return Peace Corps Volunteer Services. And they, CDC for one, CARE is another, Rollins School of Public Health. There are entities in Atlanta that heavily recruit Return Peace Corps volunteers. So it is a surprise to me that I'm at CDC, but I have to tell you it's a fantastic place to work. I'm inspired all the time by the people around me.
I bet, and constantly intellectually stimulated.
I have to try to keep up.
I bet. Now, Dr. Jacobson, you're constantly intellectually stimulating others. I'm sure you had something, or many things, maybe.
What was interesting is I grew up in a town in rural West Texas. If you've seen the movie Friday Night Lights, it was a town called Odessa, Texas. I grew up about 50 miles west of that. And this is sort of a dust bowl, sort of small town, rural area. And basically you saw two professions growing up that impacted you. You had teachers and coaches, mm-hmm. and then you had those that worked in the oil field. And working in the oil field, when they call them roughnecks, and that is an understatement to how rough and difficult and dangerous mm-hmm. that type of job is, working in the oil field. And so I chose the other in terms of a route in which sort of inspired me. And growing up around teachers and coaches my mom worked in the school where I grew up. And so I don't think there was one person in particular, but being in that sort of environment, I think had sort of an impact on me that I probably didn't realize at the time. And so as I carried forward, I have also thought later on, matter of fact, I teach a junior leadership course every Wednesday, and Miles is one of my students, and they asked, that question was asked to me actually last week, and the short answer I gave, no one sort of, I couldn't identify one particular person. I think because I could not, I felt sort of an obligation to want to give back and want to be a part of an environment where Miles and Addie, hopefully, they could mention more than one person throughout their entire career at Mount Vernon, to be a part of a school that the names that are impacting you are sort of endless, that it's beyond that one teacher that had an impact on me. It was that preschool teacher. It was that right. fifth grade teacher, et cetera. So to be a part of an environment where you can assemble a team who are going to impact students from the very beginning as they graduate and position them for a college and career and citizenship is significant and an extraordinary opportunity and responsibility to be a part of. So hopefully they would be able to sort of talk about multiple people that had an impact on them while they were at Mount Vernon.
Absolutely. How about you, Don?
Well, it's interesting. I'm a native New Englander, as Susan, not from Maine, but from Connecticut. I grew up in a town called Waterbury, Connecticut, which was basically a blue-collar town. If you had the opportunity to see Ken Burns' series on World War II, Waterbury, Connecticut was one of the cities that he centered on. It's a manufacturing city, and obviously was very instrumental in producing all that was needed in that war effort. And neither of my parents graduated from high school. My mother was a factory worker. My father was a policeman. But I had a very powerful educational experience in high school. Went to a Catholic high school in Waterbury, Sacred Heart High School. Had a great principal, Father John Blanchfield, who had a great influence on me. And my basketball coach in high school, John Gilmore, had a great influence. We had a very successful team. He himself was an educator. Almost saw him like kind of a John Wooden type of person. And I think those two people and the experience we had in high school really, I think, led me to, as Dr. Jacobson said, want to give something back, get involved in education. It was a very powerful experience for us, especially in senior year. My wife, I have been married to for 39 years, we're members of the same high school graduating class, and our very best friends in the world are also married and members of that class, and our children have grown up together, and it's just kind of carried on through the years. So we have a lot of common things to talk about as we look back, at our families as they've grown, at our high school experience. So I'm quite certain that's been probably the most influential thing in my life.
Excellent. I ask that question because when it comes to academics, you take a different route. I mean, some people like to teach college-age kids. Some people apply it to their job, and they're a PhD of chemistry, and they're never involved with kids. But the opportunity that y'all have to affect the lives of these kids every day is phenomenal. I would like to ask both of the students, you know, some of our listeners might not be familiar with Mount Vernon Presbyterian School. I'd love to know from a student's perspective, if someone's looking at a high school, why would you recommend Mount Vernon Presbyterian? How about you, Miles?
I'd have to say personally that the reason that Mount Vernon's specifically really incredible is that the smallness of it. Because, like, we're all a really good family. Like, the teachers really know you. And the fact that you can get that extra time with, let's say, chemistry, that you would never been able to get to if you were at a giant high school of, like, 500 people. But the fact that the teachers know you and know your specific, like, problems that you have with certain subjects, that you're able to, like, get help out with the academics. Mm-hmm. But also, when it comes to sports, is that you can be like, well, this year I've always been interested in football, so I feel like I'm going to play football this year. So you try out and you make it almost all the time because there is not that competitive edge that you would get at normal big 5A high schools.
Right, but incredible coaches too, so you can really improve on your skill.
Exactly. Coaches are incredible. Like, if they have like the ability to have the time to teach you, then you will get that satisfaction of trying to play the sport because they will unbelievably help you with that.
Terrific. That's great advice. How about you, Addie?
Well, going off of what Miles said, although he's right, it is really kind of a family environment, but also as the school grows, you know, I've seen it grow just, you know, in the past month. I mean, I've been watching it grow ever since, I was first a student here. So seeing it grow, I know that even more so in the future will the faculty and staff, you know, be able to give students that sort of one-on-one feel. And it's also just sort of the sense of pride that comes with going to a school that is unique and that, you know, it is LEED certified. It is, environmentally conscious. You know, we're big on new things and, you know, trying new things and, really sort of putting ourselves out there and, venturing out into, you know, being unique. I think there's a lot of features at Mount Vernon that, you really can't find at many other schools in the area. And I think that's why people choose to send their children to Mount Vernon.
I know one thing for sure. The Global Initiative is awfully unique.
It is, yeah.
The Global Learning Initiative is really a reflection of a 21st century design initiative that we've launched this year. So you include the CDC sort of connection with a Global Learning Initiative, but we've also launched the Center for Design Thinking that our lower school students are participating in. This is really a unique sort of program to schools, to independent schools in particular, in the state of Georgia and really across the country. It's based on a model developed by Stanford. We're not completely doing the entire aspect of their model, so we've created a deep design model that's based on discovery and experimentation and eventually getting to that producing stage. These students these days, they just don't want to consume information, but they want to produce it, and they want to be a part of something that is meaningful. So the fact that we have this Global Learning Initiative and the fact that students chose the topic of infectious diseases, while in its initial state is surprising, at the same time, at the end of the day, it's not surprising because they want to participate in something that's meaningful and to give back. There are a lot of design warnings going on throughout our country. And one thing that we're looking basically at the past of our school, but we're really focusing on our future. And we're about to go through an exercise in launching our new strategic planning process. There are a lot of documentaries out there right now. And what we're going to do is we're dividing up our faculty and staff and as well as our board of trustees, student representatives, and parent representatives, and we're dividing them up into three groups to watch three different documentaries. One you've heard of is Waiting for Superman. The other documentary is called A Race to Nowhere, and the third documentary is called 2 Million Minutes. 2 Million Minutes has been out for several years now. It's on DVD. A Race to Nowhere, there's a special screening that took place here in Atlanta, and what we have done is we have sort of purchased a one-time showing of that will take place at our school. And then the third documentary, Waiting to Superman, obviously is out there. So if you just look at the contrast, and these documentaries are not necessarily saying the same thing. And so if you watch 2 Million Minutes, it basically says you have 2 million minutes in your upper school career to get your transcript in order to compete against students in India and China. So there is a pressure of a time limit, a time frame in which you have to get it right, get ahead of the curve, and pack your transcript with AP courses, an IB program, or whatever it may be in order to compete against students across the globe. Now, what's interesting is the contrast in some ways would be A Race to Nowhere, which basically would say we are stealing the childhood from our kids because we are putting such a pressure to perform versus a pressure to learn.
Interesting.
So what's going to be fascinating about this exercise is that those people, those parents and those board members and students, they're going to watch 2 million minutes and they're going to come out of that and they're going to discuss the implications of this documentary on our school. So if you take in isolation, probably what they're going to say, you can already guess, they're going to say, let's do this. Let's make sure we have X, Y, and Z. And then that same group, the different group, watching A Race to Nowhere and to hear what they're going to say and its implications on the school are going to be significant. So we're going to compare and contrast these three documentaries, but as a way to launch our strategic planning process in the future because they have a tremendous sort of implication on what we are trying to accomplish at the school. So I'm very curious to see what is going to come out of this as a way that's going to impact our students and position them in a way that they're going to be not just prepared for college, but again, for a career and for citizenship.
Who came up with this idea? I mean, the three documentaries are, like you said, very different. I'm familiar with two, but I'm not familiar with the 2 Million Minutes. Who was it? You?
I did.
That is the coolest idea. That would be. I'd like to do a documentary of the three documentaries.
Sure.
And people's. That's a really cool idea. So you have faculty, staff, probably athletic directors, people in the athletic department, that would just the contrast all between facets. Those two. And then students, too.
All facets. So we definitely want students because obviously they're the ones that are being impacted by that. And if you look at college admission standards, it is a very competitive market, even for state schools. That probably wasn't the case 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think that is something that you have to be cognizant of, yet at the same time, what are you trying to accomplish at the school? So we try to really focus on four different components. We say we want to foster a lifestyle of learning, not just a lifestyle of performance and packing your transcript and packing your resume. While we understand the game, the educational game, unfortunately, that has to be played at the college and university level, we want to promote a lifestyle of learning. So this Global Learning Initiative just really ties in so well to that. We're also promoting and fostering a lifestyle of service. So not just an outreach component of students going beyond the walls of the school, but actually there's a philanthropic component that they are paying for, that they're giving back in that way as well. We're also, on top of that, we're fostering a lifestyle of leadership. So whether it's our prefect system that we've introduced this year or not just our student council, but we really feel like leadership is about opportunity, and there's plenty of opportunity at the school. So you just heard from Miles talk about that he founded the business club at the school. And next week, I believe, Miles, you're going to Harvard Business Club and the opportunity to hear from a speaker there and as a group go to that. Or if it's Model United Nations or whatever it may be, there's an opportunity to lead. Everybody has the capacity to lead, not the typical traditional sort of leadership components of president of your student, of your class, or team captain. And then on top of that, the fourth component that we're really fostering is a lifestyle of spiritual growth as a Christian school, to grow in that way. In a race to nowhere is sort of an interesting sort of dynamic as it relates to that facet. So, you know, leading and serving and growing and learning are just four critical pieces that are taking place at the school. Obviously, they're interdependent, but that's something that we are focusing on and striving to achieve, knowing that we have these students in front of us every single day and just interacting with them. To me, that holds us accountable as adults to provide the best possible educational experience for them that is multidisciplinary, yet wrapped up in a very unique, family-centered, nurturing environment.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit last time about technology. Don or Dr. Jacobson, would you mind elaborating a little bit on how Mount Vernon Presbyterian is engaging technology? And your point was brilliant last time about how we just learn so much differently.
Well, I think part of the deal is that it's the access to information. So I just talked about growing up in a town in rural West Texas or in Maine or part of New England. We didn't have access to the internet. So the people that really we had access to information were the teachers that were in front of the room or maybe a World Book Encyclopedia or to that effect. So in many ways, the way we all went to school in here, the content drove the skills. There's a shift now, and that shift is that skills are driving the content because the content now can be accessed in ways that it just could not before. And because of that, that is such a focus for us at the school that we're focusing more on teamwork and collaboration and critical thinking and oral and written communications, those sort of 21st century skills that drive the content. So you don't give up the content necessarily and the richness of that, but the skills are the focus because it is what they come out of that program. And technology is just an accelerator. It's just a tool that adds to all of those skills. So while we have a one-to-one laptop program in the upper school where every student has a laptop and required to have one, and we have smart boards in every classroom and the engagement of that technology and the availability of it, it's also about how applicable is the technology for what you're doing and how are you going to then integrate that into what's taking place. And not that it's just teacher-applied technology, but it's student-applied technology. So we really, while there is a tremendous focus behind the scenes about making sure that we allow access for students with technology, we don't use the T word a lot, because when you do, there's such an overemphasis on it mm-hmm. that sometimes there's you lose what are the true learning components mm-hmm. and the skill set that one is going to come out. So, for example, Skyping, that is a substitution. Without that, you could not communicate that way with someone across the globe, which our students do participate in that sort of activity. But we want to make sure, what are they coming? What's the takeaway from that Skyping experience that is going to build their skill set?
Mm-hmm.
Not just we Skyped and therefore we are technologically advanced
right.
as a school. So that is sort of the emphasis that we take. It's more of an accelerator and a tool to advance what we're trying to accomplish.
That's a great point, because we do tend to learn those or lose those interpersonal skills and the ability to communicate. As much as we talk about technology, people still need to be able to communicate orally, and those skills are so important. Any other last final comments or questions or anything y'all want to enlighten our listeners with?
Well, guys, I thought I'd like to talk a little bit in more detail about this study. The Global Infectious Disease
yes.
Study, just kind of the program for the year. We kicked it off in September. We had Dr. Rudley Archer talk about the earthquake in Haiti and the spread of, you know, in an earthquake situation like that, the climate becomes much more prone for infectious disease to spread. So she talked a lot about her on-the-ground experience in Haiti in terms of assessing the state of disease and also, obviously, prevention. Ramu Kaladi came from CDC, and he is a policy analyst, and he talked about how CDC looks worldwide to identify hotspots that are occurring and then how they develop a plan to intervene when those hotspots occur. We had a very interesting session in October where we had two speakers from the CDC. Dr. Louisa Chapman spoke to our middle school. Now, I just want to preface it by saying during the course of the summer, we assigned summer reading to our students. The middle school were assigned a book called Fever 1793, which was about a devastating outbreak of yellow fever in the city of Philadelphia in 1793. And our upper school was assigned The Hot Zone by Richard Preston, which talked about the potential for an outbreak of the Ebola virus in the 80s right outside of Western Virginia, so right in our backyard. So the two speakers in October, we split the middle school and the upper school. The middle school heard Dr. Louisa Chapman, who was an expert on yellow fever, and she addressed that topic, which picked up on what they had read in the summer. And then the upper school, Dr. Jonathan Towner, who was a world travel expert on the Ebola and related Marburg viruses, talked about his research in the United States but also in Africa in terms of the sources of these viruses and the devastating effects they have on the population. And it related to the summer reading book that the upper school had in the summer. Our next session will be in November. And although it may not be purely an infectious disease, it's going to be centering on global use of tobacco, particularly by youth, in all of its forms. And, you know, that is more a self-inflicted type of situation where the diseases that result from tobacco use are more self-inflicted than infectious. But we felt it was important for our young people to hear about this because it's something they're being impacted with every day of their lives and obviously bombarded with in terms of media. In January, we'll be studying AIDS globally. And not only some of the stuff I read from High Noon, to begin the program, but also, Addie mentioned, we had just come from an assembly at our school where invisible children from Uganda made a presentation about not only the war in Uganda, but the tremendous devastating effect of AIDS in that particular country. And so we're going to be looking at the AIDS epidemic globally in January. February, we're going to be looking at safe water globally. And in some places in the world, water is becoming a new currency. I mean, it's absolutely mm-hmm. essential for life. And it is in areas of the world, obviously, not safe and cause of many different types of infectious disease. In March, we're going to be looking possibly at tuberculosis, malaria, and polio, which, again, as I mentioned earlier, are on the spread. Even polio, which was practically eradicated, is still present in four countries, and recently there was an outbreak in a country that had been previously polio-free. And then tying it all in at the end, we think it's going to be interesting because President Obama has launched a worldwide global health initiative in his administration. And in talking with CDC about it, they're involved in planning as we speak in terms of how this global health initiative will be implemented worldwide. So they're in a planning stage and probably will have much more to say about that in that spring session when we meet to culminate our study in April. So those are just some of the topics we'll be looking at in terms of global infectious disease. And again, it's just a tremendous opportunity for us to cooperate with the CDC on it. Susan, I don't know if you have any comment on that.
Well, just basically to reiterate how well this is going and worth the time investment, investing time in the students, but also building this relationship and seeing how we can do it again with other schools in the area.
Just real quick, adding on to what Mr. Sasso said, I also think it's been really important for not just for me, but for other female students at the school to see. We had Dr. Rudley Archer, as they mentioned before, come in and talk to us about her job at the CDC. I do think that was a really cool experience, just to see a female, up there speaking to us about, what they do, is so important. And I think in terms of the future and jobs, I think, one thing that really, no matter what, the world is always going to need, people will always need doctors, nurses, researchers, lifesavers, really. And I think that's why this is so important for students to learn about, young people to really think about as possible career paths, because it will be very important in the near future.
So can you see why I love this school?
Yes.
I mean, this is just a tremendous opportunity to be engaged with students who are so passionate about these type of topics that are really outside of their scope. And typically you would find a situation where students are so insulated to, what's happening maybe on Friday night or at a football game or the social component of it. And that's important too. Yet at the same time, they are really looking beyond the scope of their community. And I think it's having such a tremendous impact upon them. So to be engaged with these type of students, and Addie and Miles reflect our students at the school, and it's such a pleasure and a privilege, such a high calling to be a part of such an institution where you have passionate students on these type of topics.
Sure. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
just
okay.
To say, and it's inspiring for my generation, for myself, to see the younger generation picking up the torch to carry on and to an even greater degree. So I'm inspired by the students. I think that not a lot of airplay is given to young people today who are doing good. They're probably doing it quietly. But to say I am encouraged about the future. A lot of people talk about how they're not encouraged about the future, but I do see it in the next generation. I do see it in the youth, such as the students at Mount Vernon Presbyterian School and elsewhere. So thank you for giving them airplay.
Oh, absolutely. It's been my pleasure. Any open houses or anything coming up so other folks can come and check out your fabulous campus?
Absolutely. Actually, we have an open house today, and we have most of our open houses are live open houses where mm-hmm. you can just drop in and you can take a tour of the school, many times led by students like Miles and Natty or on the lower school or preschool campus. Students are an active part of giving tours, and there is one taking place today. But our full list of group tours and open houses are listed on our website at www.mountvernonschool.org.
We do have one coming up in the evening in mid-November. The exact date, I can't pinpoint, but it is coming up. It's a 6 to 8 o'clock in the evening open house on the Mount Vernon campus. Invite everybody to come over and take a look at us.
Excellent. We'll include your link on the website, too, so folks can click on your website and check out your calendar. A lot of great things going on over there. We should catch up with you in maybe 6 months and see how the global initiative's going. I'm even more interested in that documentary thing. I can't wait to hear what the outcome is of that. And how will you gather the research from that? I mean, will they be like focus groups, roundtables? I mean,
from the people that are part of each group, there will be a set of questions, and these questions will be similar to each group,
mm-hmm.
so that because there's going to be a contrast that's going to take place. So once they see the documentary, they're going to meet and divide into smaller groups. They're going to answer these questions. They're going to dialogue about the school. So, one, it engages them, the community, mm-hmm. be an active participant in the future of the school and the implications of this documentary on the school. So, they'll divide up. They'll sort of talk about these questions. These three groups will come together, back together in January. There will be a presentation given by each group, mm-hmm. and then there will be some follow-up dialogue based on the data that's collected from these three groups, and how can we synthesize that information? Is it interdependent? Is it such a contrast from one topic to another? But yet at the same time, see how it impacts the future as we begin this strategic planning process. Many strategic plans are checklists of mm-hmm. of different areas that you want to address, and then when you check it off, you're finished and you move on. We are moving into a different type of strategic planning. We want a live document. No matter what is going on at the school, we are agile and we're nimble, and we can pivot to whatever may take place. And obviously, it's based on a core set of principles at the school that I've talked about this morning. Yet at the same time, we want to be nimble in this type of global marketplace, things that are this economy that's taking place, and how can we best position our students for it. And I'm hoping that these three documentaries, these three groups, are going to have an impact on that planning process.
Terrific. Gosh, great show, y'all. Great information.
Thank you.
Now, I know Miles and Addie would probably like to hang out a little while longer and stay out of class, but you guys have to get back to class, and we've got another show coming up. So we'll have y'all back on again, though. Let's keep in touch, because this
so
was fabulous. Yeah.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Great information. I love to see smart kids and adults that have passion for teaching. It's fabulous. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for listening to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto. Have a wonderful week.